You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy!
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for March 12th, 2024. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, Certified Professional Organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and the behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat feature, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. And we're streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail.
Hi, Facebook.
Shout out to all of our listeners outside of North America who haven't changed their time yet and yet still managed to find us here at the right time. I completely forgot, even though Connie reminded me last week that
our time change was
not everyone else's time change. So we're an hour earlier outside of the United States and anywhere else that did change their time this weekend.
And I imagine we're going to get to 1 o'clock and suddenly there's going to be a barrage of people going, where's the show?
What happened?
Sorry.
And we're sorry about that, but you can watch us on YouTube later.
Right.
Okay. We're going to start by following up on last week's weekly tittle, which was called Seeking Clarity. The assignment was to explore your personal balance between clarity and convenience. Let's hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who experimented with setting a frequency of use threshold this week or last week. Please let us know in the comments. YouTube viewer CM shared a tittle report and also coined a new phrase that we might need to talk about adding to our repertoire. CM writes, "Too much stuff on my bathroom and kitchen countertops for convenience sake. If I have to have items out because I don't have enough closet or cupboard space, then I'm going to try to contain them, but this time not just on a tray where they're so visible. This week, I'm going to try to contain them in something where they will be less visible, like a plastic bin with a lid. Back in the day, one nice bread box was simpler to deal with visibly rather than several loaves of bread out on the counter. I'm going to call this the bread box way of organizing. In a larger way, it's like using a wooden trunk with the lid closed to hide large items inside. With both a bread box and a trunk with a lid, things can be right out in the open, but hidden in plain sight. Gail, what do you think about the bread box method of organizing?
This is really a very clever concept. I like the visual reference of a bread box as a way to think about the container. And using a lidded container to cut down on the visual distraction of all the stuff, but still keeping it out in the room or on the counter for easy access. That's really a great idea to think about it that way. You're in essence adding a drawer to the countertop by having a box with a lid in it. As long as it doesn't bother you to take up that much space on the surface, it should be fine. If all those items cover the surface already, then if you're replacing it with a lidded container, it should be an acceptable change from all of the stuff on the counter to a box with the stuff hidden inside of it also on the counter. By definition, the container is going to have to be big enough to hold the stuff that you had up there. So it's not going to materially change how much counter space you have available. It's just going to make it look a little differently. So I'm thinking that will be okay. I will say that in my head, I can hear viewers who are saying, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind, it's forgotten, it's erased from my memory. And I'd answer that it's okay. You don't have to remember what's in there. You don't have to remember what's in the box. You just have to remember to look there when you want something in order to see if it's already there. And for those of you needing a visual reminder, maybe it would help to add a descriptive label to the lidded container, like grooming supplies or cleaning supplies or whatever it is that you're containing. Give it just a little, a little label that references the contents a bit so that you or someone else can tell what is supposed to be in that container. Then you don't have to remember what's in there. You can just look at the label and go, oh yeah, it might be in here, and pull the lid and see what's in there. I didn't notice that she made a reference to, if it's on the counter because my cupboards are already full, then I would say that too much stuff on the counter because you can't put it away is a sign that you've reached your physical storage capacity. You're at 100% and you're trying to get 120% by adding another container on the counter or having the stuff out on the counter. And I would add that it's probably a good time to go and dig through the cupboards and make sure everything in there is really something that you have to have. Make sure that you're not overflowing onto the counter and creating a problem on the counter because there's things in the cabinets that you haven't spent the time to call through. So do that before you add a container or before you keep all the stuff on the counter and then have to add a container to contain it. Ultimately, what we want on the counter is the stuff that you are going to use the most often and need to grab quickly. And so we're trying to think about ways for that to be less visually distracting, even though it needs to be up there because of frequency of use, if that helps.
Yeah, M offered a counterpoint to that. She said, "What about vitamins? I need to take them and would not remember them if I don't see them by the door as I leave the kitchen."
There you go. And so then you could put them in a container without a lid so you can see them, or on a tray. Even putting them on a shallow tray makes it look like a collection. It looks more
Makes it look like
purposeful.
it something belongs there.
It, you
Yeah.
know, it creates some parameters, it creates an edge, and it defines a space. And sometimes that just having a visual, oh, here's all my vitamins in this tray, or here's all my vitamins in this open box, gives it a little better look visually than just having all the containers all on the counter. But that's a personal preference thing for sure. So do it in the way that works the best for you.
Connie reports, "I put most of the baking things I use only for baking Christmas cookies away from prime placement."
Very good. That is definitely an example of frequency of use. And you get it out once a year, so you don't need to look at it the rest of the year. So you can put it up out of the way and free up your prime real estate for the stuff that you use for the rest of the year. Great job. Yay.
And Deborah replied same to that comment. So we have to assume that she and Connie are just on a wavelength and
They're
right,
vibing
getting the same chores done.
today. Right? That's awesome.
Lisa Beth says, "As we finish projects from a tornado following by a derecho, I have to look up what a derecho is because she mentioned that last week. I'm doing it right when things go in finished areas." So she's putting things back in order after a
After a
catastrophe.
disaster, as
Yeah.
yeah. Oh, cool. Well, good for you. That's great. I'm sure that it will feel. It's like the turnaround, right? Like it's the silver lining that you're getting out of having a disaster happen is that it's sort of forcing you to reset your contents in a way that works better for you. So good job. Nothing like the weather, the unpredictable weather, to force you to do something that you wouldn't do by yourself otherwise.
Tammy says, "I'm inventorying my cabinets as we speak because ca the counters are overflowing and I have no space to store fridge contents. Ugh, I feel frustrated.
Oh, that's not good.
I
Yeah,
have
so.
four plastic tea pitchers and stuff. I'll probably end up taking a couple to trash. They're clutter. I feel overwhelmed." Take a breath.
Yeah, good point. Good advice. And, just work on one area at a time. And it sounds like if you have refrigerator, you have a stuffed fridge, that's probably the one that needs your most immediate attention because it's preventing you from putting groceries away. So I would start there and work your way out to other areas. And work on the areas that are that you need the most frequent access to first, so you can affect your daily life quicker. If you work on something that you it's a cabinet you go into all the time, then work on that cabinet and see what can be subtracted. See if there's things that you want to keep it that can be moved to other places, so that other areas of the kitchen, so that the spaces that you use all the time function better and easier, and that will give you an effect. You'll reap the reward, I mean, every day if you do those pieces first, and it'll give you some strength and some relief to then go and tackle the other areas that you don't touch as often.
I have a suggestion for people who live in, compact apartments or small houses. When we live in a very small house, and to try to bring everything out and put it on the kitchen counter to organize it and put it away again is impossible.
It's
There's
too much.
not enough counter space to hold everything that needs to be organized. And so we have a couple of collapsing tables, one that we use as a dining table if we have people over, and
Right.
one that's just a square card table to play cards. If you have such a table, you could use it, or you might be able to borrow one from a friend. You don't need it indefinitely.
Right,
It's
right,
just going to
right.
be a staging area while you're working on the project. Set up the card table, clear everything off of the first space you want to work where you want to work on, and put it on the table. And it doesn't go back where it came from unless it makes the cut.
Right. And
And
it's important to make sure that you have the time, like, you don't want that card table to become permanent.
right, it can't stay there.
It can't stay. So you have to be able to put it up in a time frame when you can then pay, do the processing work that he's describing
Right.
in a more timely manner.
Yeah, you definitely want to set aside. Well, you want to make sure that you don't move so much stuff onto the table that you can't handle all of that in one session's work. Because ideally, you want to put this table away again at the end
Yeah,
of
at the end of
today,
your couple of
even if you're
hours,
not
yeah.
finished the whole project, you finish today's project, today's piece of the project.
Yeah, and that's a good point to make. Don't offload more than you can handle for your stamina and your free time, right? If you only have 2 hours of stamina, don't pull out more than 2 hours worth of work to do. And so err on the side of caution, pull out, a shelf at a time and work on it and complete it and before you start again. And if you need to stop at the end of that, you can break everything down and come back another day and do it again.
On the vitamin question, Deborah commented, I put mine in the cabinet which also holds my kettle and coffee making supplies. I pull them out when I'm pulling out my coffee making supplies in the morning.
That
So
works.
yeah, if you're a coffee drinker, M says I don't drink coffee, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, but you must
But
drink something, right? You might.
if there's another routine you can pair it with that puts it out of sight but will bring it to mind every morning, maybe
Yeah, and
it's
that's the habit linking that Ed has talked about before, where you have one habit you do all the time, and you link a habit you're trying to learn to the habit that you're already doing all the time. And so for those of us that drink coffee, it is a necessity. It happens every morning, and so we don't forget the coffee even with the we're asleep. And so if you associate something with making your coffee or whatever your morning drink is, that, like she's saying, she gets the coffee and she brings the vitamins down. And so those two things are linked in her mind, so she's attaching the habit, one habit to the other, and getting it done, which is great.
Let's leave that right there. I may share some more tittle responses and comments later, but we have a lot of material prepared, so we better get on to
Paper,
the paper
right?
topic, the dreaded
Yeah,
and much
it
appreciated paper topic. Paper is a plentiful source of clutter and frustration for many people. Even though our digital lives offer us more options than ever for going paperless, supposedly, paper clutter still seems to keep stacking up. Today, we're going to examine habits, behaviors, and attitudes that lead us to keep more paper than we need or can manage, and offer pointers to for purging your personal paper piles.
paper clutter management is a topic that we get requests for all the time. And we haven't dedicated a full episode of paper management for more than a year, so it seems like it's a good time to take it up again. And let's start by talking about some of the results from our survey around paper. We started off by asking our audience, how would you rank paper clutter among the categories of stuff that you have difficulty managing? 44% of our respondents listed paper as their number one clutter issue, which is why we get asked for this topic all the
Yeah,
time.
that actually surprised me. That was higher than I would have guessed.
And then another 27% ranked paper as their number two or number three clutter issue. So that all adds up to 71% of you count paper among your top three clutter problems. So clearly it's a high priority for most of you. Need support. You guys need support. So that's what we're here to do today. 13% selected the answer, paper's a problem, but it's not in my top three. And only 17% of our audience said that paper clutter isn't a problem for them. We missed an opportunity here for not asking a follow-up question about this group. We're hoping that some of you who consider that paper isn't your issue, that maybe you can give us some ideas. We'd love to hear what methods and techniques you use for paper management, what has been successful for you. We should have asked that question and we didn't. So we only thought about it afterwards. It's like, oh, they don't think it's a problem. Why? What
Right.
are they doing?
We definitely encourage y'all to chime in as we go along,
Yeah.
if you have suggestions beyond what we're going to offer.
If you're one of those people that paper isn't a problem, I'm sure we would love to hear from your expertise. Next, we asked, for which types of paper clutter would you like to get help and or advice? And we offered a long list to choose from, but here are top responses from among the types of paper clutter that we listed. Number one was financial paper other than bills. So 50% of you wanted that one. Lists and notes. 44% of you asked for that. Medical was 43%, so almost a tie. Receipts and personal records, so that's 35% of you. Reading material
That
at
was two
33%.
categories that were tied at
Oh,
35%.
I didn't realize that. Receipts and also personal records, separate ones. Okay, gotcha. And then reading material at 33%, taxes at 32%, and job-related paper and bills at 28%. So those that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 types of paper were a problem for at least a third of you, almost or more. So there you go. We all have financial paper other than bills that we don't know what to do with, right? Top of the list. We also asked a follow-up question here to find out about categories of paper clutter that you struggle with that we hadn't listed. And in your answers to this question, we learned a couple of interesting things. First, we discovered that we'd left out some important categories, and that included photos and inherited paper, including historical stuff that supports genealogy, genealogical research, and sentimental paper like letters and cards from friends. In your answers to our what else question, we also noticed that the way people describe their paper clutter really reflects their anxiety, confusion, and frustration that paper can invoke in us. The value of any given piece of paper is more relative and changeable than any other kind of clutter. Unlike other clutter, paper seems to go through transformations the longer we hold on to it. An item of paper that starts life as a highly relevant and fresh note, intriguing reading material, or useful documentation can transmogrify over time into a mystery. Is this item reference material? Is it an overdue action item? Is it a memento, a historical document, a raw material for crafts? Or is it something to line your birdcage with? And the longer you hold on to and ignore a piece of paper, the harder it becomes to make sense of it or to find meaning in it. But still, we keep it because we tend to invest paper with a greater significance and value than most of it really deserves.
I want to add one more bit of feedback from the survey that I'm calling an audible on you here, but this is a
Okay.
comment that I really liked because another question we asked was we asked people to complete one of several statements about paper, and AG offered this one. I struggle with paper clutter because of poor time management, indecision, and being scared to get rid of something important. or that I will regret getting rid of later. Also, some stuff I just don't know what to do with. Miscellaneous stuff can be a surprising amount of stuff. I
Yes,
thought
it can.
that neatly summarized the problem of paper.
Right? And the anxiety level and the distress that comes from dealing with it, for sure. Thank you, AG. Appreciate that. Sources of paper clutter are vast and varied. We receive incoming paper through mail mostly, but also from other sources like kids' gifts and artwork, parents' inherited records, school records or work benefits or business records. There's also a category of paper clutter that is paper in your house that's really a keepsake and nothing else. That paper gets misclassified a lot, but if you keep it as a trigger of your memories of something that happened earlier in your life, it's really a keepsake and that's it. And storing keepsakes is a different conversation to have versus regular garden variety paper clutter. And we're talking about garden variety paper clutter today. I will mention later that you really want to shunt off the keepsakes to their own capture system, because it's really not, if you're only keeping it for your memory, it doesn't need to be handled in the same way or mixed in with your regular paper that's,
Lost in your filing cabinet.
yeah, that doesn't need to be
Yeah.
buried in amongst other stuff. So we'll talk about that later a little bit. So what hangs us up so badly when it comes to paper clutter? We pulled a whole bunch of these comments from the survey, and then also having just my experience in working with clients. The first one that hangs everybody up is that paper represents too many decisions. Each piece of paper is a decision. Do I need this? Do I not need it? And having to make that decision off one piece of paper, every piece of paper that you touch, and then, 500 pieces of paper in a stack that's 2 inches high, you can make 500 decisions in that one little stack, and it still takes forever to get through it. And then it feels like you haven't done anything, but you've really made 500 decisions. So it is a problem that each piece of paper is a decision point, and it puts a lot of stress on us to make that many decisions so close together. We also are very unsure about what to keep. What if I need it in the future? I see that with clients all the time. I don't know whether this is important or not, therefore I'm going to default to keeping it. And I get that is a reasonable strategy, but I think that it also contributes to a lot of backup, because if you err on the side of caution, then you end up keeping way more paper than you actually need. And so I try to advocate with clients that if you have a continuous type of paper that keeps showing up that you continue to be unsure about, that you go and find somebody who can tell you whether it's okay or not to keep it, so that you can make that category disappear if it turns out you don't actually need to keep it. Especially when it's something that you get over and over and over and over again, and you're just keeping it because you don't know. Not knowing isn't a good enough reason. So if it's a big category, we need to find somebody who can advise you that you trust to say, yeah, you're really not going to have to use that anymore. And when I'm working with clients, I'm sort of that expert to say, this is why you're getting this piece of paper. This is what you need to do with it. And then you can let it go and hopefully help pe train people. That's part of what I'm doing when I'm working with them. Working with paper is not super rewarding. There's not a big reward for working with paper, or not much reward when you're doing that work. And it does feel like D reducing paper clutter is the ultimate chore, just by the definition of chore. Like, nobody likes it. It isn't fun, and it isn't it. I can sort a bunch of paper in a big hurry, and I think fun for me, even sorting paper is a little bit of, calling it fun is a little bit of a stretch, but I'm comfortable with it, and a lot of people are not. And so I know that the fact that it's a lot of decisions and a lot in a contained in a very small place, you can burn a lot of time and not see much difference. So you don't get a lot of, oh, I moved the couch out of the house. That's a very visible change that feels like you
Right.
got something out of it, right? And when you're doing paper and you clear off one little stack of paper off the corner of the desk and you've spent 4 hours doing it, it doesn't feel like you won much that day.
Well,
So,
especially if you got it stashed in a box or bag of shame in a closet. So
right?
you bring it out and you
You bring the
reach in
shame
and
out.
you grab half an inch of stuff or three sheets, whatever you feel capable of handling. And when you're done, the box or bag goes away again, and there's no other than, the contents of the trash or recycling, you don't have the there's not a payoff. There's
There's
not
not a
a
big, not a lot to
tangible.
show.
Yeah. Look what
Totally
I
true.
did.
Yeah. Which is why we recommend doing things like counting the bags and keeping track of how many bags you put in recycle or how many bags you take to shred or whatever, so that, there's at least some game related to all the work that you're doing. So paper for a while, it's easy to store it and do nothing. You can hide paper from yourself pretty easily and go fill in the nooks and crannies. I will tell you that there's some point where you reach that threshold of, oh my gosh, this is now I'm suddenly it's overstuffed. But you can definitely hide it from yourself for a while. So by the time you reach the saturation point where either visually it's a problem, or you've run out of space, there's no place else to stash it. By then, the problem has gotten so big because you've been stashing for so long that then it really becomes a major problem. So, in the short term, it feels like, oh, yeah, I'll just hide this box here under the bed, or I'll just stick this here behind the couch, or whatever. You can stash things out of the way for a while, but it's going to come back to bite you in the end. And that the fact that it's easy to hide for some months or years, just sort of postpone, it's kicking the can down the curb, down the street, and you have a bigger problem when you wake up again. We are very overwhelmed to get started on the process. That's part of why we always have to come back and talk about paper and talk about the process of paper, because people look at it and go, oh my God, I don't know what to do. There's so many decisions to be made. I don't know where to start. So we're going to talk about that today. Paper is easily scattered all over the house. It is easy to have little piles of paper squirreled everywhere, on top of all kinds of surfaces, inside all kinds of containers. It's easy to let the paper sort of blow a snowstorm across your house. And so that's part of why paper clutter is such a problem, because it's not hard to put a piece of paper down somewhere. It doesn't wreak havoc immediately for you to let go of a piece of paper somewhere. And so it sort of creates some chaos over time because of that. Handling paper from deceased relatives sometimes is depressing or sad. And so it's one of the ways that handling paper is a problem, because if you're dealing with, all the papers that came out of your deceased parents' house or your uncle or whatever, who wants to be sad? It's just like, oh, I got to pull out this box, and this box is all going to make me cry. So we avoid that a lot, and it's part of the reasons why it's hard to get started. Paper shredding volume is too large, and it gets backed up. So we create these paper piles of, I need to shred this, except that we think we have to shred it ourselves at home. And then it takes way too many hours for us to shred all that paper in our little home shredder, right?
Right.
And so people tend to make up piles of, I'm going to shred all that. And then you end up with big bags of paper that need shredding that project never, you never pull the trigger on that project. And so then you just have piles of, this really should be shredded, and you never get to it. It's hard to get off email lists. This is a
You
problem.
mean mailing lists?
Mailing lists, yes. I wrote email lists, but I meant mailing lists. It's hard to get off those lists, and more, it just increases the paper that comes in the mail. You may not have a capture or keep system to set up that's set up that you can manage to deal with the incoming paper. Like, you have paper coming, but if you don't have a system to process and put away the paper that you need to keep up with, then you're going to get backed up really quickly. We get sentimental and we want to keep everything. So that makes paper a problem for us. There are too many people's paperwork to manage. If you have a household with a lot of people in it, then you're getting paper for everyone. So exciting. and it just makes your paper management that much bigger. And too many other people's input to the process too, actually. Then it's like you have to contend with those other people in the management process of the paper. We keep an ever-growing collection of notes to ourselves. I have so many clients that have, they write on little stickies, they write on, I don't know what it is about the back of an envelope. Everybody writes on the back of the envelope. And invariably, I find a really important list on the back of what, in essence, is junk mail. And I have to very carefully open the letter and recycle the rest and get the envelope and then try to capture what's on there somewhere else. And so, if you think out loud by writing onto something and you grab a random piece of paper, then you are your own generator of paper. You're manufacturing it from scratch in your house, and you will have an ever-growing collection of notes that can get out of control in a hurry. Teachers have, in particular, have an issue deciding what's valuable to save for use in a classroom or not. Teachers tend to fight with, "Oh, I'm not using that paper now, but I can use that in a future class, or I might need it in a future class." And so it sort of gives them, and then they have to have like 30 copies of something. So it gives them a reason to save more paper than the rest of us save. And then it's times 30. And so their collections of saves tend to be much bigger. Lastly, every bit of paper may or may not trigger a to-do item. And I wanted to throw out thanks to Jade for that option. That was one of the things that she suggested. You pick up a piece of paper, and one of the choices is, "I'm keeping it because I need to call this person. I need to file that document. I need to mail this off to my, I need, there's always, I
Right.
need to book an appointment."
I need to
And
decide
so,
whether to go to this event or whether to buy this thing.
yes. And so, part of the decision, keep toss decision making process is whether the paper triggers a to-do item that you need to capture. And so, all of those things are why paper clutter is such a problem for everybody. It's not just you. It's the same for everybody, is what I'm saying. Okay, so where to get started and how to manage. And I'm gonna go through some steps now. So now's the time to take notes if you want to. So the first choice is decide whether you're working on the current incoming paper or the pre-existing piles of paper. And in other words, the paper backlog project. Working on the current paper requires identifying the types of paper you're receiving and from where, and creating systems to handle each type of paper that you get. Working on the backlog project of paper is you're going to find and sort and cull through the volume before you ever try to capture them into your existing system. So it's two different projects and two different sets of steps. We're going to start with the backlog paperwork. All those stacks and boxes and hidden piles you have all over the house, and you know you do. I have unearthed them. And I have to say this
Many of
estate.
you, not all of you.
I have been working on this estate since July, and we are actually coming to the end this week, which I can't believe. But we found paper stashes in this house for 17 different people. Six of them were the original family, the original two parents and four kids. But then there were all these other relatives' paperwork that came to the house, business records, keepsakes. I've been going through Christmas cards from the 1920s. Like there is so much family-related paper that ended up in this house, and it is a huge stack of stall, stall, stall. So we are finally making all the keep toss decisions for all the people that came before. And let me just tell you, wow, y'all could have thrown away some of this paper. That's all I'm saying. And they did not. So we are making our way through it now. And it is an immense amount of weight. And it's taken hours and hours and hours to get through it all because we find really important pieces of genealogy in the middle. I opened up a pamphlet. This is the crazy one. A fold, an 8x11 that had been folded and then folded again to be a pamphlet. And I opened it once, and then I opened it again, and $70 fell out.
Wow.
Like, somebody had stashed $70 inside this pamphlet in this stash of paper in the house. And if I hadn't opened it completely, if I had just opened it halfway and stopped, I wouldn't have found the money. I had to open it all the way, and then money flew out at me. So I keep finding important little things in amongst all of the, paper that got stashed. And the farther that I get along in that project, there was a big stash of things under a pool table. A lot of boxes went under the pool table, is what I'm saying. And the farther we got into the pool table, the older the records got, until I was actually dealing with paperwork from the 1920s. And it's been fascinating to look at it. And it's now ephemera. It's not necessary, like electric bills from the late 1920s, HLMP electric bills. It wasn't Houston Lighting and Power then, it was something else, but it's not. We don't need those electric bills. They're just interesting to look at, right? So it has now aged into not important. And exactly, 100 year, I'm handling 100-year-old paper. And let me tell you how brittle it is. It's very brittle, very brittle. So there's been some fascinating finds. We have to go through it all, but where I've been doing the sorting work for 17 people over 100 years, over several generations of, oh my gosh. Hopefully your stack is not that old. That's what I'm saying. And it's an extreme example of how you can stash paper and ignore it for a long time and come back to find something has really aged beyond anybody caring about it anymore. So we're going to start. We're talking about the backlog paperwork, and that's what I've been working on at this house. And to get started, you really want to make one big box that's marked keep. And mark that make that your round one decision. You're making this first round, which is, am I keeping it? Am I not keeping it? And that's the only decision you have to make. And you want to get through everything that you've got piled up. So call this the first pass, where you're deciding this is keep, or I need to shred it, or recycle it, or trash it. This can take you several hours, several days, or several weeks. And for me, in this project, I've been concentrating 3 hours at a time, and I've probably been doing that for the last 8 weeks that I've been working on that a couple times a week, going through all this paper. We did other parts of the house, and we did other things in other parts of the house, but we got to this last room and all the stuff under the pool table, and we just sort of hit the paper vault. And so I've been drowning in paper ever since then. So it's going to take you all that time, and it really depends on how dense your stash is, but you just want to go through round one. I'm keeping it. It's going to the keep box. I'm not keeping it. It's going to shred. It's going to recycle. It's going to trash. And so get all the way through all of your hidden stashes. Go bring out the boxes, what did Ed call the box of shame. Go get your box of shame that's full of old mail out of the closet. Go pull everything out from under the pool table and go through it. And if it's going to take you weeks, then you're going to have to pull a box at a time and work on a little bit at a time and just keep going. And so keep or not keep is your first round decision. Then once you get to the end of that, you can take out your recycling and trash. And I would do that at the end of every work session, at every point where you stop. Okay, I've filled up a stack of recycling here. I've got a bunch of trash here. And whatever your work session is for the day, take those things out at the end of every work session. And then the third category of not keeping is that you need to get it shredded. And so you're going to make a pile of shredding, and it's probably going to be a big pile. And so you should get that shredding done at the end, like when you've gone through the whole project. And we have a designated area in the living room of this estate where we've been putting all of the bags that need to be shredded, specifically because we're going to call a service to come and do it all at once in one of their magic chew-up trucks. And so we're going to pay the couple $100 to have the guy come carry it all out to his truck. Stand there and watch it get chewed up and on the driveway, and then he can drive it away, and the shredding gets done in a half an hour, which is really what we're aiming for. So Collect all your shredding till the end of the project and then pay somebody to get it done. You do not want to spend your time sitting there shredding at your personal shredder. It'll take forever. It'll double or triple the amount of time you have to spend on it. And you really need to spend your time on decision-making processes, not the mindless shredding part that anybody can do for a fee. So separate those two and recognize that your brain and you're making your decisions. You need to spend your time focusing on decision making and let somebody else do the shredding. Once you've gotten through all the paper, now you have a box or two or three of things to keep, depending on how full your boxes are. That's round two. You've reached round two. When you're down to, I've gotten everything else out of the house and I have a concentrated bucket of keeps. Now it's time to sort that box into the various types of paper. And this is going to create new piles that need to be handled. Some will just need to be filed, like you're going to have collections of here's my utility bills that I'm filing for this year, and here's the document where I bought my house, and here's medical records I'm saving. There's going to be random things that you want to keep, and those are the piles that you need to file, and you're just going to sort them, together and create a paper collection of things that need to be filed. Assuming that you have a filing system, receive them. Some of the things that you're keeping are actually to-do items that need to be captured to get them done. And then some are keepsakes that need to be diverted to a keepsake box away from the regular paper capturing process. Keepsake paper just adds to the general chaos if it stays mixed in with your active daily stuff. If you decide that it's a keepsake, meaning the only reason you have it is to remember something by, then you need to divert that one off the paper trail into a keepsake box, into a capture place where you put only keepsakes so that
We
they
should
stay away from everything else.
clarify though, because there's also some people mentioned reference material. So
Okay.
keepsakes are, your only attachment to this piece of paper is a sentimental one. This re
It's
this
memory
is from
trigger.
somebody's funeral. This is the ticket to that great show. This is the
Birthday card for my dad.
airline ticket from the honeymoon trip,
Yeah, all
etc. So
that.
those are keepsakes. If it's reference material, it's going to need to go into a recovery system, because if you're really keeping it for reference, you have to
You need to be able to find
save
it.
it where you can retrieve it. And so
Yeah.
I think that's an important distinction to notice as you're doing this round two sort is, wait a minute, what is this thing? I'm calling it reference material, but
Is it really?
do I really just want to dig it out every few years and lo love on it, or am I really going to need to refer to
Yeah, exactly.
it?
And if it's and if you just want to take it out to love on it, then it's a keepsake and it needs to go in the
Right.
keepsake box
Exactly.
for sure. So for those things that need filing, let's talk about the filing system. A standard system of creating an alphabetical filing system with a new file for each piece of paper is a recipe for disaster. For example, take car insurance. When you get a piece of paper related to the car insurance and you go to file it, do you label it insurance dash car? Do you label it car insurance? Do you label it Allstate for the company? Once you have a full file drawer, trying to decide what you named it and searching through every file tab in the drawer until you find it takes forever. Usually, after a quick look, you give up and you create a new file. Then you have five folders labeled with something related to car insurance, and they're all in different places in the file drawer because they probably don't have a consistent name. How is that helpful? You have no idea how many alphabetically sorted file drawers I've dug through, only to find 10 different files with one or two pieces of paper in there, sometimes with the same file name, even though they really should have been the same file. Unless you can create a consistent naming convention so that every time you touch car insurance, you name it, you would name it the same way. If you just rely on alphabetically labeled files, then you are going to name the same piece of paper something different every time you touch it, and you're going to end up with multiple piles with related things in it in all different places up and down in the file drawer. And just the idea that Is it insurance car so it's under the eyes, or is it car insurance so it's under the seas? Is enough of a diversion for you not to be able to find something quickly. And so I know we all grew up alphabetizing our files, but it's a lame system and you need to stop it. It just doesn't help you at all unless you have 15 files. But once you have a file drawer, and you know how long a file drawer is and how many files will fit in it. Once you have a long file drawer full of files, alphabetizing it is basically useless. There, that's, I'm going to say it. I'm going to claim it. I'm going to own it. Why not try our idea of bigger buckets instead? Decide what major areas of your life need to be captured, like banking and investments, home, cars, medical, kids and school records, work records, hobbies. You can go online for a list of typical file categories too. Each bucket in our bigger bucket concept is a section of your file drawer. You can even place those sections in order of use. How frequently do you have to get into or add to those files? Put the most used section at the front of the drawer. Wouldn't that be logical? Within each section, let's try home for an example. You have various files related to home. So you might have home repairs and maintenance, home contents where you keep the receipts for things you have in the house, like here's the receipt for the refrigerator and the washing machine. Here's the receipt for the piece of artwork I bought, that kind of stuff. You might have home insurance, home warranties, if you keep the paper version of home warranties for the things that you have, appraisals, property taxes. File everything related to the house in that home section, that bigger bucket section of your file drawer. So that when you need something, you can go to the home section first, and then you're searching between seven or eight files, six or seven files, to find what you want instead of the 150 files that are arranged alphabetically in order to find something. Go into a home bucket, which in essence is a home, a section of your file drawer, and looking at those, few files there is a much more direct and shorter path to getting the piece of paper that you want than having it be alphabetical. Don't forget you can have a miscellaneous section too. There's always a few outliers that don't really make sense anywhere else. They're not, it's too small of a group to have their own bigger bucket, to have their own section. Their section becomes miscellaneous. So if there's some type of paper that gets too big and miscellaneous after you've been adding to it for a while, then you can decide that you need to add a new section and pull it out of miscellaneous later. But miscellaneous is a good place to keep the 5% that doesn't, a paper that you think doesn't make sense for any of your other broad categories, any of your other bigger buckets. Next up, you also found a collection of paper that represents to-do items. So in your keep pile, you sorted the things that needed to be filing, and we talked about filing systems. And then you also ended up with paper that was about to-do items. I need to do something with this piece of paper. Now you need to capture those items so that you can take action on them. It's time to get out the to-do list in whatever format that you use. Go through those papers that are reminding you to do something and make the action list. As you make that list, pay attention to any items that seem like you think you should do something, but you know you will never actually do it. Just be real with yourself. Don't put anything on the list that you know in your heart is never going to happen. There's no need to torture yourself by keeping the paper, putting it on the list, and then ignoring it for a long time. There's no need to save that reminder paper either if you decide that in theory you should take this action, but in actuality you're never going to take that action. And so why keep the paper there to torture you forever? Why keep it on the list at all? Just pay attention to that. Otherwise, make your list, keep the items that are supporting the list, and create a parking space of some kind for that paper that supports your to-do items. It can be a file, a box, a zipper pouch, whatever makes sense for you. You just want to capture those papers that are reminding you to do stuff. And you need to keep it together and tied to your to-do list. So however that works for you. You don't want them floating around back in the general population of paper, getting lost again. So find a capture system that works with you. Take those to-do items, make a list, put them the loose pieces of paper together in a file, in a box, whatever, and then go forward on taking action on that paper.
Well, and that could just be that can be one big bucket that you could just get yourself one red filing envelope or folder, and everything that is related to an action item that you might need to look back at when the time comes to do that item goes in that folder. And then when you write on your to-do list or in your organizer, buy tickets to the show, you can put, red folder for the supporting information that you're going to need.
To go back and pull it out and look at it while you're doing the item, right?
And while you're b building and locking in that habit. And what did
Absolutely.
want to add, talking about aspirational stuff, in David Allen's Getting Things Done system, he talks about keeping a someday maybe list or folder. And I think instead of keeping the like you get the flyer from the skydiving school and you're thinking, I may do that one of these days. You don't really need to keep that flyer, but you could put on your someday maybe list,
Do I
take a
want to go
skydive, take a
skydiving?
skydiving lesson. And then
Right?
later on, periodically you review your someday maybes and you go, I'm never going to go skydiving, not in a million years, and
I'm
cross
not
it out,
willing to jump out of a
right?
plane with a
Nope,
parachute.
that's not going to
Sorry.
happen.
Right? Way too terrified for that. If you're reluctant to give up your possibilities, then the someday maybe list is a way to corral ideas of things that you might want to do. And the trick is to not just shove everything into that someday maybe without going back and looking at it occasionally and going, yep, not going to jump out of a plane. And so scratch that off, go get that piece of paper out of the list, throw it away, right? The flyer that you've had for 10 years to remind you that you maybe want to take a skydiving lesson is no longer going to be valid. The pricing is not going to work. The schedule is not going to work. The company may not exist. So the older that that piece of paper is, the less likely that it'll have current or relevant information to the decision or the action you're trying to take. So again, you can put it on the list. I want to find out about skydiving, and you don't have to keep the piece of paper once you get it on the list. I'm just saying. Anything that you capture in the red folder that Ed's describing, your paper that supports your to-do items, you do have to circle back through that folder occasionally and find out, I did this one, right? Like I already handled this one, or I've changed my mind about it. And be pull as much as you're adding, you need to be also checking to pull things out as you get done. All right, so clearly we can't cover every possibility or every type of paper or every solution option here today. But we hope this is a good overview of the problems and solutions that you have to related to paper clutter. And now would be a good time to ask specific questions about your paper situation. We don't have very much time because
We don't have
we
a lot of
filled it all
time.
up, right? But
M says, I have found 20-year-old to-do lists with those never will get done items on them. It's disheartening. Good idea to leave them off the list.
when you make a new current list, yes, you don't need to keep capturing them. And you can look at it as disheartening, or you can look at it and go, I had an idea, it didn't come to fruition. It doesn't, you don't have to realize every idea that you have in your life, right? And so maybe, it was an idea. It had a moment. The moment passed. I'm not really going to do that. It's okay.
I
Don't
want
let
to
your
share.
old to-do list bring you shame. There's no reason for you to give yourself shame from your own lists.
I want to share a couple of comments from people in that 17%, the people who don't struggle with paper, or the
Okay.
people who have solved their struggle with paper is really a better way to say it.
Okay.
Paula says, my paper is under control because I'm absolutely ruthless about it.
Very
Everything is
good.
sorted into categories and put into binders, such as medical and financial. I go through paper regularly and toss items no longer needed, such as last year's glasses prescriptions. Ginger says, I made a list of the types of paper we receive and decided how we will handle it. One, category one, keep forever.
Right.
Two, keep for XX time, for 1 year or until resolved, until receipt of a new statement or a new policy, for example. Like when your new car insurance policy comes, you can throw away the old one because as of the effective date, this is the only policy they're gonna hold
talk to
you,
you
you
about.
know, talk to you about. Yeah.
Exactly.
Category three, don't keep. We can access it easily online. We have decided our own risk to comfort level there. And some people are, you know, don't want to have to rely on find it online, which I understand. You can, though, find the, you know, like periodically find the things online and save a PDF of it. You can usually download a PDF or just print to PDF from your computer and save those virtual records.
Save it digitally instead.
Yeah. If that makes you comfortable. Okay, we're quickly running out of time and we still have to talk about next week and such.
All right, go.
We will be back next week, Tuesday, March 19th at noon US Central Time. And I'll remind our viewers in places that have not yet gone to daylight savings time that means our show will be an hour earlier than the normal time for you until the end of March when the rest of you spring forward.
When the rest of
Right?
you catch up.
Sometimes it's little things that give us our biggest organizing headaches. Spice jars, tiny bottles and tubes of notions and potions, jewelry, accessories, sticky notes, and scraps of paper. We've mentioned that today. The
Right.
contents of purses and all the various bits and bobs that collect in our lives and our homes. Next week, we're going to offer strategies for corralling all the little stuff that causes us so much trouble. Join us March 19th for It's the Little Things, the organizing challenges of small items.
There you go.
Why don't you give us the tittle?
This week's tittle is called The First Pass. This week's assignment is to make some small progress on your problematic paper category. If you haven't already done so in answer to our survey, identify the category of paper clutter that gives you the most trouble, or just pick the paper category with the greatest volume. Schedule an appointment with yourself to make a first pass through a stack of paper in this category. We suggest that you allow 20 to 30 minutes for this task. Sit down with a stack of paper, an empty container for the items you'll keep, with a pen, a pencil, and some post-it notes. Now go through the stack and make a keep toss decision about each item. At this stage, you're only deciding whether to keep the item or put it in the trash, the shredder, recycling bin, or recycling bin. If you're in doubt, then keep the item. Save your keep items for further processing at a later time. Place them in a box or a bin labeled with the date and a note about what the collection contains. For example, March 12th, I worked on it on March 12th, and this is medical records and personal correspondence to sort and file. If you're in the 17% of our audience who don't have a problem with paper at all, then make time this week to review your paper management system that you already have in place. Is your routine working well, or are there any tweaks that might make your process even better? Try to notice if there's any place where it's backing up or you feel like it isn't as convenient as it could be, and see if you can tweak it a little bit to make it better.
Or maybe you have a new category of paper that you collect now that doesn't have a place in a system you established several years ago. A new
Like it's time to upgrade a little
subscription,
bit.
a new job, a new hobby, etc.
Yeah, all of that. That'd be a great way. We're just trying to offer an alternative. If paper isn't your problem, you can tweak your existing system. If paper is your problem, then we say pick a category and
Make
make
a
the
little
first round
progress.
decision about it and see how it goes. And come back and tell us about it next week.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. I wasn't sure you had the signs ready for a second there. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/facebook or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you every time you come. Also, thank you for your patience while we were off air last week. Couldn't do anything about it, but here we are back, and we will be back again next week. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.